It's August 5th, 2013, and you're listening to episode 44 of Nitro Beer Free to Play. I am Brian Belita, and I fucking hate dog eyes. I'm joined by Mark Bradshaw.
I don't have a problem with dog eyes because I think dogs having eyes is a pretty good idea, and you're just a sick monster.
You thought I was talking about eyes. No, I'm talking
about blind dogs.
I'm talking about dog eyes. I'm not talking about
dogs. Yeah, that's what's wrong with you?
Imran Khan.
I'm okay with dog eyes. Like the person?
The person.
I think he just misunderstood.
I think, you know what, you might be right. I've re-looked on my my stance of fucking hating dog eyes, and maybe he is just misunderstood. He does have
Himself dog eyes.
He did name himself dog eyes, and he's wearing a fedora.
Oh, then I'm off board.
Oh, okay. And Matt Pierce.
I only just met dog eyes because I spent the first hour playing that game trying to get the fucking controller to work.
Oh.
Hate PC gaming now.
What is with you and
if
your controller?
You're trying to use a controller. Yeah. Sure.
I tried.
Are you PC gaming in the 90s? Because
I don't know. How is this
works for me?
Yeah, how is this still a problem?
Now, what is happening to you? Because this is happening like with Tomb Raider too, right? So what exactly?
Yeah, so
is
with
happening?
Tomb Raider, it didn't recognize any controllers that weren't Xbox 360 controllers. So what I had to get a thing called Xbox 360 controller emulator,
right?
Which works pretty well.
I wonder what that program does.
Yeah. But at any rate, it worked okay for Tomb Raider. I had to look up some settings for the game. But other than that, it was fine.
So, I mean, I know...
But then when I went to use it with Sleeping Dogs, there's like all these compatibility issues you have to get around. And
I mean, you're trying to use a controller they didn't design it for.
Right.
With like...
PCs have had 1,000 different types of controllers.
Yeah, but they don't do that now.
Right.
Now they have a standard.
Yeah,
standard. There is one controller that's hard as hell to find and crazy expensive.
Why is it hard to find?
PCs
because
a controller standard is called DirectX.
Yeah, but they're not going to pay attention to that. The Microsoft 360 controller is the controller.
I'm just saying, it's like having an Xbox and complaining you can't use your DualShock 3.
No, it isn't. I have a PC controller that plays things on my PC.
You have a Logitech controller.
But it doesn't play
since 1994.
It doesn't play the games for Windows games that are all standardized with the Xbox controller.
Which is so far two. That's the problem.
I don't know.
It's two games that I'm having an issue
with.
It
should recognize that there are buttons, then you should be able to map said buttons to things. That's how it should work.
This is what I'm frustrated about. I'm playing PC games that don't allow me to map buttons.
Yeah.
And that's unforgivable.
Well, Matt, you should be happy with the next Illiterics Book Club choice, which will be Skulls of the Shogun. Just kidding. We're not sure.
Who is next? Me?
Bradshaw. It's alphabetical, okay. So it's Bradshaw.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Did Ron and Matt, did you both like prepare games?
No, I just realized I didn't prepare anything. Okay. So I was like, shit.
Yeah.
Well that makes sense.
But no, it's true. I mean, there are like 1,000 shitty controllers for, you know, like USB controllers for the PC. Yeah,
Is you're trying to play PC games when what you're really playing are console games on the PC.
But is it really that hard? I mean, PC games have been around forever. And forever, they've had the ability to remap buttons.
Yeah, I'm with Matt. It shouldn't be that hard.
It shouldn't, but you know, there like Microsoft wanted there to be a standard. There is a standard, and anything if even like a huge developer like Square Enix, if it's going to cost them like one more dollar to support like whatever bullshit Logitech gamepad you own,
we're not even talking about supporting a specific thing.
They just have to support DirectX. And then be like, oh, you want a fire? What button do you want to be fire? And you press a button.
And it's like, okay, this button is going to be fire. I don't even know what that button was, but it's this button now.
If every emulator made by the shiftiest goddamn people on the planet can manage to do this, then every game maker should be able to do this.
One thing I would say is like the emulators are made for like people like us who know what they're doing. Like most people who are playing their console games on their PC don't want to think about anything anymore. They just want their controller to work.
Well, and they don't have to.
They can buy an Xbox controller. And when it sees that it's an Xbox controller, it can do Xbox controller stuff.
I'm just saying,
for everyone else, it should support a standard DirectX controller.
Yeah, it would be nice if the option were there either way, whether you can use it or not. But yeah, I think Imran's point, if it's a console game that's on PC, probably has a lot to do with it.
Well, it's funny you use Square Enix as the example because they actually have really good controller support. Like Final Fantasy XIV has there's an actual controller that you can use that, or you can use a 360 controller, or you can use a hooked up DualShock, and you can change the prompts to whichever one you're using.
So did they just not like sell this incredibly valuable technology to Eidos, who they own? Because this is the thing that he's having issues with, are just like Eidos games.
Well, maybe Japan is just really
jerks.
Yes.
Japan is the jerks.
As we figured out last week from that resignation.
Well, that's not entirely it, though, because, I mean, Sleeping Dogs and Tomb Raider both came from Western developers, right?
Yeah, they're both Eidos games.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not developed by Eidos.
Well, Tomb Raider is Crystal Dynamics still, right? Or is Crystal Dynamics just a name they throw on things?
Crystal Dynamics is owned by Eidos.
Squidos. We should be clear.
It's still an actual development studio. It's just under that Eidos brand.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I could map controller buttons in Tomb Raider 2 for DOS. So
why don't you use JoyDeKey? Does that not work?
It doesn't support analog.
That program scares me, JoyDeKey. I think we've talked about this before. It's like, it's just, the presentation is just so bad. I just feel like it's actively installing thousands of pieces of malware on my computer.
JoyDeKey feels very skeevy.
It does. It's got that terrible neon green background. And I'm just, no, just let me, no.
And
stop
then there's
it.
There's this one program that I think it's Xpadder, where the guy actually wants money to like support 360 control, which, hey, that's great. You sit there and you program this thing. That's great. But he wants money, which is stupid because we're not going to pay money for that. So
I mean, it's free to just complain on Twitter that the developer should put on the controller support. And that's what I do.
Do it. Yeah.
So, Matt, have you played Deus Ex for the PC? Like using controller?
No, I haven't.
I used a mouse and keyboard on that one.
Was going to play that on the PC, I'd use mouse and keyboard.
That sounds terrible.
It worked really fine. Wait, I got that game.
What system did you play?
I played that on my 360.
Speaking of terrible.
Yeah. I was going to say, because if you played it on your computer using a 360 controller, you're out of the band.
Well, in my defense, my computer sucked when that game came out, so I never bought it again.
That's a fair point.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of shitty computers, I tried to replace my motherboard and processor this week. The motherboard turned out to be defective, but it turns out that this is like the hardest possible thing in the world to diagnose.
Oh yeah. So like, no, I'm sorry.
I just couldn't tell, and I had to eventually take it to a friend that knew this sort of thing. And he charged me $20 to run all the various tests to figure out what it was.
That's not a very good friend.
Well, it was a guy I knew in high school that, like, that's the sort of thing, like, fair you need enough to keep a friend that knows this sort of thing around,
right,
so they don't charge you $20 later.
It's like the Joker says, if you're good at something, never do that thing for free. In his case, it's killing people. In his friend's case, it's knowing what's wrong with computers.
Yeah.
And also killing people.
Yeah, so I had to RMA that thing, and hopefully I should get it back at some point. But it's always really disheartening that, I just spent all this time installing a thing that doesn't work.
Yeah, it's never fun. But
so what was it doing exactly? Because I remember you saying you just couldn't get this thing turned on, and like you didn't know where the header, like the headers for the power buttons were at and all that stuff.
Yeah, once I got all that stuff sorted out, it started up for about a minute.
Okay.
Like all the fans started. I hadn't hooked up to a monitor, so I don't quite know if it posted or not. But basically all the fans went on and then stopped.
Oh. Huh.
And then at that point, no power switching would actually turn it back on.
Oh, I know what the issue though that is. Your motherboard's gone.
Yeah. That's a $20 question.
Yeah.
Nightbeard's official IT professional, Mark Bradshaw. Thank you, Mark Bradshaw.
Not a problem. I'm here to help.
If you have any questions about IT stuff, let Mark Bradshaw know. He'll do it for free.
Yeah, totes for free. That's all I'm here for.
As long as you can tell him your problem in 140 characters or less.
This is the problem when like your friends and family realize that you're kind of decent at computer stuff. You become the IT guy. I had to move to New York City because of this.
Is that why? Yeah, I think my brother's solution for that was to hook my parents up with just all Macintosh stuff.
So the thing that made me feel really old about this is that I have a DVD drive in my computer currently. Which, I mean, you know, sometimes you need to, like, things will just come with discs, and it's just easier to put the disc in than
not
go,
easy
go to the site.
No.
Well, that's the thing. The my new motherboard does not have an IDE port for that.
No, right. It never would. It has SATA. It would never have IDE.
Well, this thing doesn't have a SATA port coming from it.
Right.
Or this DVD drive.
Because your DVD drive is old. But okay.
Yes. So that's suddenly like, well, when did this happen? Why is, like, suddenly IDE
like
port
so years ago.
Yeah, I don't think
that. Thank God those cables were so big.
They sucked, and you had no idea if you, like, hadn't pointed the right direction until, like, the thing actually turned on correctly.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you could.
They've had notches for, like, 20 years.
You could
shove that notch in the wrong
place. You could shove that notch in the wrong place. It's super easy.
Whoa. Shots fired at Mojang here.
Whoa.
Watch out.
Calling you out, you old man.
He's probably shoved notch all over the place.
Are we trying to get Notch to stop making games? Is that what's happening here?
Is that what Mark's trying to do?
Okay, yes. That was the infuriating thing about the game trailers kerfuffle. Like, in one podcast, they managed to get Phil Fish to stop developing games. We have done everything short of framing Dennis Dyack for murder. And that motherfucker still won't notice us.
I don't know. I'd like to think in some small way we contribute to Shadow of the Eternals failing like it is.
Yeah, it looked at the beginning that it was gonna it might make it.
Well, that's the thing about that. It's very contingent on if this stays at this pace, but it's never gonna stay at that pace.
Well, I don't know what KickTrack's algorithm is, but I know they. I mean, they obviously know that there's usually a big boost at the beginning and a big boost at the end.
I also wonder, when this sort of thing happens, like, how much of the initial money is made up by, like, the founders of the company, like, just taking out bank loans for, like, $5,000 and just shoving it in there to make it
look like
it has support?
If that happens, then it's Kickstarter can't find out because it's against the rules.
Yeah, but there's no way for them to find out.
Well, I'm sure they look at the bank accounts and...
Yeah. I mean, they'd have to, like, create a whole different identity and then try to... like, pledge your money as that separate identity.
Now, what you could do is you can get your friends to donate at the very end.
Yeah.
Right.
It sounds a lot like the churches where they see the collection plates with 20s.
Yeah.
That way everyone looks in there is like, oh, other people are giving 20s. I better
give 20. Right, exactly.
Or if you're like, fuck, this church wants $20 bills. I can't do that. I thought this was a poor Baptist church. I can't do this.
Soon they'll send around a basket with a credit card machine on it. No excuses.
Actually, I don't know what I would do in that situation. I don't keep cash around, so...
Yeah, very slow.
Basically, what I'm saying is fuck the church.
Fuck the church.
Shots fired.
Shots fired at the church. Fuck you. Boom. Now, my mom, on the rare occasions where I'd actually go to church, she would, like, send me out with, like $10 or $20. And, like, this is back when I was getting, like, $5 a week for allowance. And she'd, like, give me a $20 bill to put in the fucking collection plate. And no, of course not, because I was 10 and I was a good kid. And back then I believed. So, like, if I kept the money, I was going to hell. So.
Right.
But it was just very depressing to know that this church was getting.
But $20, Mark.
Yeah, I know. Like, you know, like.
How different would your life be right now if you had pocketed some of those $20?
Well, I probably would have spent that on video games, so probably about the exact same thing.
Oh, fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You'd be one third of the way to a copy of The Last of Us.
Nice.
These days. So if Shadows of the Eternals does not meet its Kickstarter goal right now, do you think they're going to launch it again?
I think they have to, because entire thing this entire... development studio is based around this one Kickstarter.
Pretty much. I mean, like we've joked before, I think they're just gonna. Is this gonna perpetually be re-kickstarted?
They say they have a ton of money already, right? Like, pledged to them, like, through some other source.
Right. I think they claim some outside source, but
how much do they need for this one? Like, 75,000?
750,000.
Okay, that's a lot.
Yep.
So, if they went from 12 million to 750,000. Then clearly somebody's willing to give them $11 million.
At least.
And then they're just saying, okay. Maybe they're just doing the thing like, okay, you have to show us there's some interest in this. Because I know Republic did that. They had to, like, they didn't actually need the money for development, but they needed that money so they could show the publisher that they could get sales for it.
Well, like, was like every time the Kickstarter fails, like the ambition for the game actually grows stronger, because first they're asking like, I don't know, like $2 or $3 million total between both Kickstarters, and it was going to be like an episodic sort of thing, and then that failed. So okay, we only want $750,000, but this time it's going to be like this full 8-hour video game, like an actual meaty video game. So I wonder, like, when this fails, the next going to be like EverQuest next. It's like, fuck you, we're going full tilt.
Oh man, we should talk about EverQuest next. But first, I just wanted, so I went to Precursor Games Kickstarter page, and their canceled one is listed as a video games project in Hamilton, Canada, and now it's a video games project in Stony Creek, Canada.
Maybe the name just changed. Maybe Canada's like this lawless wasteland.
is that right? Somebody took Dennis Dyke, took it over, like, this is now Stony Creek. But what's really weird, I don't think they did this in the original Kickstarter, but apparently at the $5 level of pledging, you can contribute content to the game. They're doing this weird thing with community content supplying. So,
is it like Insanity Effects?
I'm not even sure. I want to say, because I know EverQuest Next, speaking of, is sort of doing a similar thing. I'm not sure to what extent the I think it's Stories. I want to say,
if it were Insanity Effects, I would probably donate.
Right. What would your sanity effect be?
It would be text on the screen in like bright pink and like kind of gooey, like that old 90s Nickelodeon kind of thing that just says you gave money to Dennis Diok.
A blingy.
Yes.
Yes.
The Snoop Dogg dancing and Jeff form below.
Oh man, that would be great. So apparently. Let's see, participation influence on key story elements, plot twists, and the overall direction of the project. Create startling gameplay, nightmare storylines, and unique twisted characters.
I think that sounds like bullshit. I think that's probably, you get to go to this forum and you can say things and maybe we'll read them, but we're not actually going to do it.
They'll take some things, but yeah.
Or maybe they're just planning on relying on this entirely, and they didn't hire any writers, and they're like really hoping that there's some really good ideas from you guys, because they have nothing.
Right. Video games not hiring more writers? What? I'm shocked.
Well, and this goes to this whole thing. I know a while ago we had Ray Frendon on, a commercial artist, does a lot of really cool stuff.
Frendon of the podcast.
What?
Frendon of the podcast?
Yes.
Nice.
Oh yes, indeed. And he's actually, I'm pretty sure he's done some work for Gone Home, which is by Steve Gaynor.
I desperately want that.
Yeah, game. That's going to be cool. And I know he has been pretty outspoken on Twitter about spec work, which is basically, you know, companies saying, "Hey, we're holding a logo design contest. So designers submit your best stuff." And it's basically free, you know, they're getting free work. And a lot of people do go for it because they see it as a chance to get it out there. But he's very much against it because, you know, he's under the impression, right? If you want someone that is going to do your work for you, you know, you're going to, you know, get in touch with them and you say, okay, we need you to design us a logo. And you pay that person because you know what their portfolio looks like and you work with them to get it. And here, there's nothing holding the companies from, like, you know, just saying, oh, this is a great idea. We'll just tweak it a little bit and we'll steal it.
Also, it seems like it's setting like bad precedent, because if they know for a fact they can get like a handful of guys, just give them art if it's just halfway decent.
Exactly.
Like, everyone else is going to start doing that. Because, oh, build your portfolio. Come on.
There's a shitty thing going on in game journalism these days, and it's been happening for the last 10 years or so, that news sites will have. Because doing daily news and aggregating all that shit, that's a lot of work, and that's not a lot of work you want to pay people for.
Yeah.
So they take people on for free as quote-unquote freelance gigs.
Right.
And
free
freelance. They have them write that news for no pay, just on the promise that, hey, maybe we'll hire you one day, but if we don't, you have your name out there.
Yeah.
So it's taking a lot of like idealistic kids that are new to the industry and basically exploiting them, and it's really shitty, and I'm shocked that nobody calls them out on this stuff.
I think just the prevalence of intern work has sort of made people numb to this idea that we're doing a lot of stuff for free for very powerful, very rich people.
When you think about it, the idea of a non-paid intern is really shitty.
It's called slavery. Like, yeah.
Well,
well,
it's not called slavery, but it's called volunteerism.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you got like, hooked into it.
I think the courts ruled for the those two kids on the Black Swan case.
Yeah.
Like, there were two kids that were, they interned on the movie for Black Swan.
Yeah.
And they were unpaid interns, but then that movie made a fuck ton of money. So they're like, hey, we didn't get any of this, even though we contributed a whole bunch of work to it. Hmm. So the court ruled for them that they had to be paid.
Yeah, it turned out that the way the rules, I guess it was in New York State where they sued, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and the New York laws surrounding internship were that to be an intern, an unpaid intern officially, and not a part-time employee who is subject to the minimum wage, you need to basically provide nothing of value to the company. Like, nothing that has any monetary value.
You have to be coffee gopher at best.
Yeah, you have to be somebody who is there to apprentice.
Yeah.
But no,
so if you actually do work and, like, you know, the thing could not have been made without you or somebody who was in that role.
So basically then, virtually all of intern work ever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which I think, are we the only country that has unpaid interns?
Possibly.
Well,
I'm sure.
I know there are plenty of other countries that pay interns and have much better kind of you know, work learning environments and stuff like that.
Civilized countries.
There
I
are
guess.
Any number of civilized countries that have unpaid apprenticeship programs that are what unpaid interns are supposed to be here.
Yeah.
But no, I think that's kind of an American thing, this abuse of the unpaid intern system.
Right.
Well, and a side note, I can't hear apprenticeship without thinking of like somebody going to work as a sword maker,
right, or
apprentice.
A blacksmith. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what
exactly
based on.
What I think too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but like that's still my modern conception of that.
Right. Well, and so I mean, and Matt, what you're talking about people actually going and actually learning stuff, right?
Yeah. Like if you're going into any sort of any of the traditional trades, like if you're going into like metalwork or woodwork, you have to apprentice with a master.
Yeah.
Or with a mentor, at least, I guess they would call it. I don't think they call it master anymore. But
I guess that kind of went away in America when we just stopped making things. Like,
well,
no goods.
It still happens because, you know, it still happens, but all these shops are small shops.
Oh, yeah.
Hold on. Wait. Forget the last 10 minutes of this podcast, listeners. We need an intern to record and edit this podcast for us.
For free, yeah.
We will get yes. You will get portfolio work. You'll be published.
Well, you get a share in the profits.
We also can't teach you anything because none of us know how to do it.
We will follow you on Twitter for one day.
The experience is your pay.
I will retweet one of your tweets.
You're going to retweet one of his tweets?
No, I will, yes, retweet.
Retreat?
Not go backwards. I will treat it, but twice.
Yes. Do it again. Yes.
And by treat, he means like the horrible, like cheap spam knockoff. That's
two times.
Cheaper than spam.
Frankly, I'm surprised Matt and I have jobs, being that we're not also, you know, high level graphic designers and know every single coding language under the sun and do video work and physical mailing.
Yeah,
because that's.
I have one position, but I have like six jobs.
Yeah. Well, it's that other duties as assigned. That's a bullshit line to have in a job thing.
It's so other duties as assigned. Job description.
So to kind of bring this back to video games, am I crazy? Because this has really been bothering me for the past little while. Am I crazy to be pissed off at paying money to go into a beta? Because
that's not why.
Okay,
We've talked about this a little bit before, I think, with you, Mark.
Are you paying only for the beta, or are you pre-ordering and you get beta access during that pre-order period?
Yeah, you get beta access and you get the game at the end. But you know,
I think that's fine because you're still paying for the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, like, quality assurance and like beta testing used to be something that, you know, you paid people to.
Yeah, but they're not beta testing these days. Isn't actually beta testing. It's we're giving you our last stable build.
Yeah, it's basically you're looking at release candidates and helping them check compatibility between weird disparate systems.
Yeah,
like actual betas are way
And what's
I mean, it just seems like we're doing QA work.
Yeah, you are.
I mean, but we would be doing QA work now, or we would be doing it when the game comes out.
Right.
I mean, the other thing is you're not doing QA work. You're playing an unfinished game.
Right. And I mean, whether you want to offer feedback is up to you. I mean, you don't, you certainly don't have to. At least most of these things that I've seen, it's not like you're, you know, I'm sure they welcome your feedback. And so.
Take Mercenary Kings, for example. Mike ended up kickstarting that game, and then he gave me his extra copy.
Yeah.
That game is really unfinished.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the things people can provide for that information now, like that, since it's basically 2D Metal Slug Monster Hunter, so when you have an objective, it doesn't give you a compass showing you where that objective is, and that really needs to change.
Well, and
So people like now that game's on early access, people can tell them that, like, hey, this desperately needs a compass, otherwise the game's sort of hard to play.
one thing I would get something sorry, Brian, go ahead.
no, I was just saying, and I think so. I mean, the only other way to do like compatibility testing and, you know, message with a lot of different things. I mean, you want to get paid for your game. You've made your game, you want to get paid for it. And the only other way that I could think would to do a similar thing would be, okay, here's a free demo, it's just one level.
Right.
But people don't want that. People don't want to download that. You know, more often than not, I
Like
don't know the
stress
last time I
tests.
downloaded
I know,
a
and
demo.
people expect demos to be more polished than they are. They don't expect betas to be very
Right.
polished at all.
Right, and again, you don't want to give out your full game for free. So here's a compromise. You know, people can help kind of support there, and they get the full game, and they can provide feedback as you work, and
But then
it's.
again, like the demo was there to like provide like an insight into the game before you buy it. So
Right,
now
but well,
you
and
still have to pay full price. Well, not full price. You get a discount price usually,
that's
but yeah.
for like a finished product though. The demo. I mean, I'm talking about like a, you know, a test build. Solely for the purpose of getting feedback, like a single level thing, instead of giving out your whole game for free and saying, okay, let me know if you guys have any problems.
One thing that kind of interests me in that, because Emerald was talking about Mercenary Kings, is like you're playing a lot of this game in a beta state, an unfinished state. Would that be any interest at all in still playing that game once it finally comes out, or you just be fucking sick of it? So have you
Well, I
like
mean,
played your fill of that game in a lousy state that should not have been sold?
keep in mind that the genre I describe that as is Monster Hunter-like, and people play Monster Hunter for hundreds and hundreds of hours. So as long as they
But
keep
that's.
interesting things, and as like you're bringing in new people to co-op with, then.
I mean that's a fair point, Mark. I mean I've thought about like, okay, you know, I got, let's say I kickstarted this game, I got a test build, and you know, and I can play it and stuff. Maybe it has some sort of online component, and you know, when the game launches, maybe they're just going to do a wipe, so maybe I don't want to play. But really, it boils down to, I mean, if you don't want to buy a beta, then that's fine. That's don't. But there are plenty of people that feel like, you know, they can give their cash to their developer to help the developer out and get some early access. And there are some people who are just generally interested in kind of Q&A work, like you said. I mean, they really want to say, okay, hey, here, I've given my input. And I know I saw that a lot on the Boss Monster Kickstarter, which was a board game, like a tabletop game, a physical thing. And they, you know, they sent out print and play versions to people that pledged at a certain level. And there were a lot of people who said, okay, hey, you know, here's my game session overview. You know, this felt really good. This felt like it didn't work. So you know, it boils down person to person. If you don't like it, don't do it.
Now, paying for prototypes, that's what I don't like. Like, I love the idea of the Oculus Rift, but I'm just gonna wait for a retail version because I don't want like that the version that's not as good as the one that's gonna come out eventually.
Well,
Right. their thing was that you were paying for a dev kit.
Yeah, but
Right.
and
I'm
they
not gonna
told
pay
and
anything.
I think that's a little different for hardware, because that's a much bigger investment.
The thing I that does worry about this is that the more we do this, like the earlier and earlier developers will like push out these betas, you know, as incentive, Kickstarter incentive, whatever, and that we're basically like pricing an entire class of people who do this for a living, like an entire like got it, like an entire job description out of existence. At some
Well, I
point, they
mean,
just start relying on us entirely for this crap.
they've been cutting out QA a lot over the last 10
Yeah.
years. Like, I know, I can't remember if it was Wada or the guy before him, but Square Enix president at the time said, we really want to cut out QA and just have people, like, test it and then we can patch it. And look at Ubisoft games. I'm pretty sure they don't QA those at all anymore.
Oh, fuck no.
Yeah, like, Assassin's Creed 3 was a buggy piece of shit.
Right.
Bethesda, I don't know what the fuck their
Well,
QA was in
and
the
it
first
sucks
place.
because
Bethesda might be
that's when
impossible.
people get really pissed off at a shitty launch of a game.
Well, yeah, that's like if you play like an MMO, like that's in permanent beta status. That game is never finished.
Like, what if they released Skyrim 6-7 months beforehand, and people who pre-ordered the game, they got no quests, but they got the world? Like, would do you think that would have made a better end product for the retail?
Probably not, because I don't think Bethesda has any interest in, like, fixing those games, because they release so many of them in this state, and they never improve, so I don't think that's their priority.
Well, it's definitely not going to happen now, because Skyrim sold 12 million copies. Yeah.
I don't think they care about that.
Amazon UK called it the best game of the generation, or voted it the best game of the generation.
Oh, well, thanks, Amazon UK. I was concerned. I was worrying. I was wondering about that. What is the best game of the generation?
Isn't Saints Row 4 launching with, like, a game of the generation edition or something?
Yeah.
Because usually it's, you know, a game of the year edition or so.
Like 100 something. Yeah. Like, you get a dubstep gun.
Yeah. I had to laugh at that.
The extra dangerous Wub Wub edition.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So I thought
probably going to wind up like the Saints Row the Third Collector's Edition, wind up at your Best Buy for like $50.
See, I always look at those, and it's like, if it were a game that I didn't have yet and wanted, I would probably buy one of those special editions that are just dusting up the shelves.
But the problem is there, if it was a game that you wanted, you would already have it.
Yeah.
That situation is never going to happen.
It's always the games that like all fall to $20 three or four months later, like an Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Max Payne 3 dropped after like 4 weeks.
It's $8 on PSN this week.
That's crazy. With or is that like outside of PSN Plus?
PSN Plus, no. but I don't think the price is that different. Like maybe $5 either way.
Yeah, that's crazy. No, the Oculus Rift is looking. I'm seeing some really neat things for the Oculus Rift.
I was freaking out before we started recording because apparently Strike Suit Zero has been like. It's modded to work with Oculus Rift now, and that game's probably kind of crazy with that thing.
I bet. Yeah, before I think Matt linked a video to Strike Suit Zero, which is where I guess we're Imran Suit. And yep.
No, Imran mentioned it, so I looked up a video.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So I don't know. The Oculus Rift it's onto something. They're onto something there with this Oculus Rift thing.
I really want it. I just want them to go ahead and announce retail version.
Exactly.
Especially since there's a prototype version that's been going around recently that has a higher resolution display in it that apparently makes a humongous difference.
I think they put the 1080p version at E3.
Yeah.
Nice.
So I'm eager for I'm not buying an Xbox One. Just give it to me.
I
got money.
I saw a demo for like a cover first person cover shooter on the Oculus Rift that involved, I don't know. I guess he had like a move, joystick. I guess the PlayStation move.
It was a traditional flying mouse.
Okay, maybe that's what it was. And, you know, and he, like, you know, held it straight out in front of him to mark a point and then down at his torso to mark a point. And from there, that's how it, like, learned when he was moving around to duck and stuff. I thought it was a really neat usage of kind of...
And you know whatever Valve is working on is going to use that.
Yeah, they've been crazy about supporting it, so...
Has there been any, like, any reports, like, how heavy, like, the Oculus Rift is on your head?
It's apparently not... that much bigger than like a pair of can headphones.
Okay.
Supposedly it's not very heavy. It's not, I mean, part of it's because electronics have come a very long way since the last time you tried VR.
I'm imagining, you know, like, I don't know, 15 years ago or 10 years ago, an Oculus Rift with like two CRTs sticking out the front of it weighs like 40
I'm pretty
pounds.
Sure I've seen something like that. Like, you just had to stick your face into a hole or something, and it was, like, connected to Doom in an arcade or something.
The trick with this thing is that, actually, Sony's been doing this a while with their head-mounted displays. The video processing unit and the battery are in a hit pack. So,
right. I think in this video, this third-person cover shooter, or first-person cover shooter, He had like a bandolier belt with some stuff on it.
Also, I've decided to term that like you stick your head into a VR machine thing, a gaming glory hole.
Yes, I approve of this. Hashtag gaming.
Gaming hole. Like, beachhead VR or something. You always see that at arcades and you're like, oh, I wish.
Oh, right.
It's not even stereoscopic.
No. It's just bad.
All right, so let's talk about the Bioshock Infinite DLC.
I don't know anything about the Bioshock Infinite DLC.
So they announced technically two things, but three downloadable things.
Kinda.
Has anything like, downloadable come out for it yet?
Yes, the Clash in the Skies, I think it was called.
Yes.
It's basically Horde mode.
Okay.
And who gives a shit?
Yeah, because that's what you want, horde mode in a game that didn't play terribly well to begin with.
You want to know who gives a shit? Like Ice-T or Ice Cube. Which one?
What? One of them.
Which one was which is the one that played horde mode?
Ice-T.
I was about to say, neither one of them were in Bioshock Infinite.
No, I'm talking about...
He was in Gears of War, though.
Yeah. Yes,
but Ice-T. Bioshock Infinite in particular is bad about hordes. Like, I like a lot of that game's gameplay, but... Like, it's a lot of that game's combat is, who is shooting me right now? Oh, it's that guy.
Well, a lot of it is like, I don't know where I'm being shot at. Oh, God, I'm dead.
Yeah.
And that happens because, you know, Columbia is this huge, like, 3D environment. But anytime, like, there's more than, like, two guys shooting you, you are completely screwed. And that's what
Horde mode is. Sounds like a Battlefield game.
That's the reason that, like, Gears of War Horde mode works, is if... You have people watching every direction.
Yeah.
Like, Mark and I, we had some pretty epic horde mode nights in Gears 3.
Yeah.
And if you didn't plan and you didn't have people looking each way, then, like, playing it alone would have been the shittiest thing.
Yeah. And that's, not even playing it alone, it's like, if you're playing, like, squad mode, that would also suck. But the entire point of Bioshock Infinite is, like, you're one guy and there's Elizabeth, like, handing you stuff. And it's, like, not someone who's actually killing somebody for you. So you're just, like, one dude who's got all these guys coming after you. It's like, this is like the opposite of what I want at Bioshock Infinite. And it's weird because the entire like complaint about its narrative was that it was weird that the only thing you could actually do was shoot people. So they just gave us more shooting people.
Well, I'm 99% sure that that DLC only exists because the other DLC, which sounds way better, is going to take until 2014 at the earliest.
Also, they said there was going to be a season pass, which like indicates like more than like one thing.
God. Well, okay, so the next DLC is a noir mystery story set in Rapture before the fall. You play as A. Booker and Anne Elizabeth. Like, one episode is Booker, the other one you play as Elizabeth. And I guess it's set up in the whole Andrew Ryan universe.
Which is, it seems like it's going to be freaking huge. If it's, I don't know, it's going to be huge, right? It seems like it has to be, like, more than, like, a DLC pack. It has to be more like 2 or 3 hours. Well, it has to be, like, it's a game.
I assume it's going to be, like, Minerva's Den size.
How long
like,
was that?
Each episode, that was about 2 or 3 hours.
Okay, so it needs to be bigger than that.
Closer to two. I mean, they don't need to do that much to it, and clearly they have all those Bioshock assets.
Supposedly it's all new assets.
Well, I think it's...
Which is
my
crazy.
Problem with this is that, while I'm really excited and I like the idea and I love the noir setup, going to Rapture is just the easiest... It's the most no-duh thing they could have done.
It is, but like they have two places they can go to, and they went to Columbia in the past game, and now they go back to Rapture. They can't create like a third place without creating a third game.
Well, I don't think they needed to create it. I think Columbia would have been a better choice. I think Bioshock 1 was about Rapture, but Bioshock Infinite was about Booker and Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And I think there were many more and better stories that could have been told in Columbia. Like, you even got a couple of those things, like that hunter guy that wasn't there, or the journalist.
Well, that was the stuff that we wanted, and it's clearly not the stuff like Ken Levine actually had in his head. I can see why he would want a beautiful, like, Rapture in the same technology and as looking as good as Columbia. Like, Rapture looking as good as it possibly could.
I can see that, but it was... When they first announced Bioshock Story DLC, that was the first obvious thing that went to my mind. It was like... After finishing Bioshock Infinite, I didn't want them to go the obvious route.
Well, that would have been the... I don't know, but thinking you say, wouldn't that be the obvious route? Going, like, telling the story of the hunter, telling the story of, like, the revolutionary Booker, like, leading like, the name of that group.
Maybe those things would have been the obvious route, but I think something in Columbia wouldn't have been.
I don't know.
I think Columbia is much more of a... It was much more of a backdrop in Bioshock Infinite than Rapture was in Bioshock.
I think it would have been more... Because the thing that's not obvious is, like, Booker and Elizabeth in a noir story in Rapture. That's not obvious. No one saw that coming. Maybe going back to Rapture is kind of obvious, since it's kind of weak.
Like, that... Yeah, no one saw the noir part. I don't have any problem with that stuff. It's just Rapture.
Well, if it had been, like, a story of a new Elizabeth and a new Booker, and they were doing, like, this noir... of course, it's going to boil down to the same bullshit Bioshock gameplay, because it's the only thing the developer knows how to do. But if it's going to boil down to, like, being, like, this noir mystery with a new Booker and a new Elizabeth, I would rather have it on Rapture than back at Columbia.
It's more, part of it's just Rapture fatigue.
Okay.
Like, how many times have we been back there at this point?
I wonder if maybe this is a reputation of Bioshock 2.
Maybe.
Like, he wants to create his Bioshock 2. He just wants to wipe it off the map entirely, just blow it out of the water, and even blow, like, Bioshock 1 out of the water. Just
so, like, what
this
what
is you, all of his storytelling, like, advancements that he has made. This is
so
the
like
best
what, way. What you would do to Deus Ex 2.
Yeah, you... Like, Human Revolution 2, or, like, Human Revolution...
Son of a B.
Wait, you mean that iPad game?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to play
it. Wait, you acknowledge the iPad game, but you don't acknowledge Invisible War?
Invisible War did bad things to me, man. All right? Just let us down.
I am interested to actually take Bioshock Infinite's combat into Rapture. Because, okay, so Bioshock 1 scared the shit out of me.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
At a very fundamental level, that... It's almost something about that world, like the splicers and all of that, that all...
It was very unnerving.
Yeah, it's almost like Dead Space in its way.
As the protagonist of Bioshock 1, you felt weaker than everything else, even though you were blowing everything else away.
Yeah.
But in Bioshock Infinite, you always felt stronger than everybody.
I don't know, Bioshock 1 combat still felt... I don't know. I mean, you just said...
It felt way more survival horror to me.
Well, the problem with Infinite's combat was, like, the parts where it was difficult was because you felt completely overwhelmed and you didn't know where you're being attacked from.
Right.
As but long as like you got one room and like it was inside, you could handle pretty much anything because Booker was like the most competent man in the universe.
If you saw the enemy, you have the hand of God on them.
Yeah.
But if not, then it takes a little while to figure it out. With Bioshock 1, I always felt like I was being chased by the enemy.
Yeah.
Like they always had the advantage. Yeah. So I'm curious, like, I want to see how they marry those concepts together. I know they already said Elizabeth is going to be a bit more survival horror-y, which I'm not sure. Like, on one hand, I think as a concept is great, but on the other hand, Bioshock scared the shit out of me. So we'll see how that works out.
I don't know if I like the idea of Elizabeth, like, I guess she's going to be a more, like, empowered character because she's going to be an adult and she's probably going to be able to kill people. I don't know if I like that idea for Elizabeth, though. It doesn't...
Well, if it's more survival horror, maybe it's more running from splicers than...
And that's probably actually the fall of Rapture, because there's going to be two parts, like before the fall and after the fall. Or right. Like the bombing. Basically, this tells the story of the bombing, from what I understand. So,
yeah.
The bombing.
I'm looking forward to Gone Home as well, because that's kind of what I wanted about out of Bioshock Infinite in the first place.
What was Gone Home?
Gone Home is... Go ahead, Imran.
It's Steve Gaynor's game, and he was one of the writers for Bioshock 2 and Minerva's Den.
Was this the Kickstarter project you were alluding to earlier?
No.
I don't think it was ever Kickstarted.
No. Okay.
But it's basically, it's walking around, it's like Dear Esther with more to it.
Right.
Okay.
Or Dear Esther with something to it.
Yes.
No, and you know, Steve Gaynor, he's in with the whole Idle's Crew thumb. Idle Thumbs Crew, and like
crew.
I think
they
Chris Remo done. And Jake Rodkin did the website, and Chris Remo's done music for it, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. It's set in the 90s.
Oh, it's going to be terrible then.
No, it's going to be weird for me since I wasn't in the States for most of the 90s. Like for the 90s years that counted.
Okay, you
like
we
came back
pants.
Once a year.
We had streaming parachute pants.
Like, I came back one year, and there were these pog things.
Yeah.
And
do you know what street sharks are?
Yes, I do know what street sharks are.
Okay, and you're caught up.
And I'm set. All right, sweet. Yeah. And I know what a trapper keeper is.
No, that's 80s.
Lisa Frank.
Son of.
Does that name mean anything to you?
No.
Lisa Frank, not 80s. Is that 90s?
No, it's not 90s.
Huh. Nirvana.
All right, we're gonna take a break while everyone Googles Lisa Frank,
and then come back, and we'll get into some street brawls.
Also, Lisa Frank street brawls.
We're back. What, Mark?
No, it's good. I'm sorry.
What? You sure?
I'm sure.
You sure?
I'm sure.
Too late.
I was about to ask, like, how far do you guys get in Sleeping Dogs, but we could actually do that while we're discussing Sleeping Dogs.
Well, I beat the game.
We're talking about it. Right. Imran has beat the game. Mark, have you beat the game?
That's further than I got. I got to, okay, there was this one part where, like, you pick up your friend's Starlet girlfriend.
Yeah.
All right. And I got her. Okay, you. There's this one dude who's like super into feng shui, and you kill him by fucking up his apartment.
Oh yeah, and freaking him out.
And freaking him out.
You kill him by like reorganizing his apartment.
You don't. He freaks out and he tries to run, and I think other people kill him.
Oh, okay.
This because he assumes there's ghosts.
Yeah, I just thought like
heavy. Yeah, he's a heavy heroin user, and like the lady who's like trying to lead the gangs tells you like he's super into feng shui. We can kill him by fucking up his apartment and like doing some weird superstitious shit to his apartment. So you find this one dude called Old Salty Crab, and he tells you all the ways of feng shui, and like he tells you how to like give bad feng shui.
Oh my god, I cannot wait for this mission. I want to kill someone because they just the lack of feng shui in a certain area was just too much for them.
We'll back it up a little bit. We're talking about are we actually recording? I assume we are.
Yep.
All right, so we're talking about Sleeping Dogs, Brian's Illiterate Book Club choice.
That was my pick for the Illiterate Book Club.
It was Brian's Book Club choice.
This game was announced in 2009 as a True Crime Hong Kong. And eventually Activision Blizzard canceled the title.
I'm just imagining the Law and Order chung chung. But maybe with a little oriental twist to it.
Did anyone like the first True Crime game or play it? Did anyone have fond memories of that? Because it seemed like the laziest GTA ripoff imaginable.
I'll put it this way. I play everything, and I never played True Crime.
I don't even remember True Crime.
That was an Xbox One game.
I really just remember the name.
Yeah, the name, was it Streets? Was that the Streets of L.A. thing? Yes.
Yes.
Well, True Crime Hong Kong was intended to be a reboot.
Reboot of the gritty reboot.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, go on. So this was announced in 2009 as True Crime Hong Kong.
Yeah, and then Activision canceled it in 2011 because they figured they couldn't make a franchise out of it. And if they can't make a franchise out of it, they won't publish it.
Then shut up.
So about 6 months later, Square Enix announced, hey, we're picking this up. This is going to be part of our big Western push. So it's made by United Front Games, who I don't know where else you'd know them from. Little Big Planet Karting, I guess.
It shows. Not really, but...
Yeah. And this is... It's not hard to say this is their best game.
It's a fucking good game. I'm not very far in at all. I'm through the first kind of, I guess, what I might call the early game or tutorial bits. And I think I'm almost done with like the first case that you get, which is just like, you know, picking up a drug lord and you go to the club and you have to sing karaoke. So I have my first karaoke experience.
What'd you sing?
I fought the law and the law.
I think it's always that, isn't it?
I appreciate that one for the irony.
Yeah. Is that always the first one?
Oh, probably. By the way, the karaoke stuff doesn't get better; it gets worse.
That's fantastic though, because it should be worse.
Right, it should be really bad.
The most awkward, tone deaf thing possible.
Yeah, and luckily it's super easy to score really high on it, even if you like completely like blow your lines. So it's not a huge problem. But God, that's such a bad mechanic.
Wait, were you actually singing, Mark?
Yeah. Guys, it hooks up your microphone. And
it totally does. Please, and can also if you could record a video of you doing that the next time you do that, that'd be great.
If you want me to do a let's play, I can do that. That's not a problem.
Yes, let's play of just the karaoke sections of Sleeping Dogs.
I think Sleeping Dogs is probably the best of these serious open world games.
Yes,
anything that's like an actual you don't have magic powers or you can't survive a 20-foot or a 40-foot fall off a building.
Are you including like their first like GTA, like the first 3D GTA games?
Yes, Sleeping Dogs is definitely better than those.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're not talking about impact or revolutionary or whatever. In terms of actual game, it's better than those.
It feels like really gritty. It feels really good. Yeah.
I enjoyed it better than I did Saints Row 3rd. Like just off gameplay and just like
I can see that.
Classic games.
I mean. Yeah. Right.
I'm not sure I agree, but it's close.
Yeah, I guess I think if you change what you mean by like enjoyed and had fun with, maybe as two separate things. I could see that.
I wouldn't say I liked it more than Saints Row the Third, but that's because the thing that's enjoyable about Saints Row the Third is that it's fucking nuts.
But no,
it's very hard to compare those games, even though they're the same genre.
Yeah.
Well, and
I can't think of. Off the top of my head, like a game set in such a dense city, like as Hong Kong, or maybe have there been any other kind of big games that were set in Hong Kong?
Nothing that I can remember.
Well, recently. Aside from
Donkey Kong.
Right. Donkey Kong. I mean, Hong Kong is just such a great setting for the gameplay that this brings to the table. Well, and also, you know, the story being what it is with the characters and stuff. And it's just, it's so good. Like, it's the start, like, the intro scene with that like, chase as you're running away after that deal goes sour or whatever.
Yeah. And that could have been handled so badly, because when the chase segment came, I said, oh, God, this is going to suck. These chase segments in these games always are terrible, and actually worked out really well.
Yeah, yeah, like, whenever an open world game decides to put you on a scripted path, it very rarely works out.
Yeah.
But all the mission design in terms of where they put you, there's never been a point where I've been like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know where I'm supposed to go. This isn't working right.
God, yeah. And I really appreciate that, like, I can just tap M, you know, at least since I'm playing on a computer, to cycle through active missions instead of, like, having to go into some awkward menu and select a mission.
Now, we'll say, like, if you're on, like, a gamepad, that gets kind of awkward because it's set to, like, your left thumbstick. And, of course, like, you're constantly tagging, like, accidentally clicking it all the time. So, like, you're constantly, like, swapping between, like, missions.
Yeah. No, I've done a couple chases, you know, foot chases, mm-hmm. Just in the, when you, once you get into the open world of the game. And I mean, you know, it's obvious that it's a kind of a path that's set through. I kind of wish that there were maybe different paths that, like, you could maybe go to try to cut him off, whether it be like on the same straightaway and just maybe there's a thing that you can vault over to the left instead of a wall, instead of just kind of doing exactly what the person in front of you does. But either way, it still feels really good.
And the platforming is actually kind of great in this. It's not as good like Assassin's Creed platforming, but it's way better than it needs to be for the type of game it is.
Right. Well, I mean, this guy isn't, you know, a super gymnast, so.
Actually, like, speaking of platform, like, Assassin's Creed in particular, that's one of the things that did bother me about the game, is that there's times where I just need to get past this one block, just cut right through.
Yeah.
But I can't because there's too many buildings in the way.
Yeah.
Right. And, like, there's no, like, obvious, like, place to grab hold of and, like, vault over it. It feels like you should
be. So I'll spend a while, like, wandering through the alleys or trying to get up somewhere, and then turns out, oh, nope, it's a dead end.
Yeah.
So also, some of the collectible items, because there's, like, sometimes you just, like, open up the ability to, like, know where, like, all the lockboxes are at. So you know for a fact there's, like, a lockbox somewhere in this block, but it's, like, on a roof or some bullshit, or, like, inside the building. So you, like, you wander around this entire block thinking, well, where the hell am I supposed to jump up at? I can't tell. And you can't tell if, like, you know, do I do it now, or, like, there's a story mission that actually opens up this building later on. And that was frustrating. And it's, like, if you are supposed to, like, clamber onto it, it's not entirely obvious all the time.
So you mentioned the fact that, like, occasionally you'll get things to show up on your minimap, it'll show you all the treasures.
Yeah.
The way you get that is by dating girls, and for some reason, once you've dated them to completion, it's a fantastic phrase, that they give you get that, gain that ability to find out where treasures are.
Well, yeah,
and the game originally had an actual dating system.
I'm really into Amanda, though, man. I wanted to just keep things going with her. Are you saying that there's, like, an endpoint to Amanda my relationship?
You only get one or two at most dates.
Oh, man.
Which is they're all super scripted.
Yeah, they spend a lot of time, like, introducing each of these girls, and you don't do a lot with any of them.
Like, right, that's when the first girl that I met, and I don't know, maybe it's like the straw again, so it was Amanda, who's like the American girl who's come, and she wants to learn Kung Fu, and, you know, and you go on this ride, and he's like, oh, yeah, this is where they filmed Fists of Steel, and it's like, oh, no, you know, it was Fists of Fury Steel or something like that. And, like, it felt like a really genuine relationship starting up there.
It had that dating system in it. It just, they were pressed for time, and they had to cut the whole thing.
That's too bad.
But you said the amount of time they invested in that, the amount of money must have been crazy too, because Amanda's played by Emma Stone.
Right, right.
And she has, like, 40 lines combined.
I saw her voice in the credit, or, you know, her listed in the credits. Like, I think maybe I was talking with David Marchman about that. And I was like, oh, Emma Stone is in this.
Yeah, I thought she was going to be, like, a huge, like, plot element later on. It's like, no, she shows up, she's gone.
Who is your character Wei voiced by? Is there anyone that I would know?
I was thinking about that today, and I can't, like, I feel like it was somebody kind of notable.
They got some really great voice acting for this game. They really knocked it out of the park.
I really like the randomly dipping into Chinese
thing. Yeah, I really like that. And I guess I have just Cantonese captions turned on, so it only pops up when, you know, when he says something in Chinese, or Cantonese or whatever. Yeah, it's got, and despite it being like a kind of gritty, serious game, it is obvious that the developers kind of had fun with it, because, you know, like I can put on the Just Cause 2 outfit, Rico's outfit from Just Cause 2, yeah, which is a neat, fun little tie-in, and there's a bunch
we
of
just wear like a, or like wear like just a luchador outfit all the time.
I saw that. I got the luchador mask, and I was like, am I going to be affected somehow in the game if I wear this?
I ran around wearing a Left 4 Dead t-shirt.
That's awesome. Like, what if my my face XP or whatever it is?
Yeah.
Oh, it's that dude. That dude voiced him. Okay.
I don't know if you like you worry about that much, because I just like found like the all white like cop outfit and just like wore that all the time because it's right. Fucking rad.
Well, I guess there are.
That's some... one of my favorite things about the game is that you can dress like a cop and you can arrive to meets in a cop car.
Yeah,
and nobody says anything. That's like, oh, like... just wait. That's just his way. That's what he does.
No way. Like, he's so crazy.
Or like you can be like this undercover cop and like do all these cop like nice things, like go on like cop cases and just like just wander around, like kick a dude in the back of the spine and kill him.
Barefoot and shirtless. What's funny is like, and of course, because I guess you only get XP for missions, but that stuff only really matters during missions. So like, you know, there was some mission where I was chasing, you know, a minibus around or something, and I kept hitting like, you know, fences and street lamps, and it would be like, you know, property destruction -5, you know, cop XP or whatever. Right. But then the mission was over, and it just like plowed down, you know, an entire road of fences and lampposts and nothing happened. Yeah.
Or like there was like this one pedestrian like walkway, it's like, and like people just like pouring all through it. It's like, I can probably get a cop car up there. And you can totally get a cop car up the steps and just like wipe out that entire pedestrian
That's
walkway.
That's what I love about open world games that have driving and stuff is.
Yeah, and the cops don't like that one bit, and you have to get away from them at that point. But you can do it.
God,
so one time in one of the races, I hit a corner wrong, and then my car just like vaulted up 1,000 feet in the air and went flying backwards.
So it was like getting hit by a giant's club in Skyrim.
Pretty much, but the best thing is it started like eventually there was a little message on the HUD that said you are leaving the race area. And I was like, no shit.
Vertically. It was great. I got to this like little park and I had to beat up some thugs before I could put on a video surveillance bug on the little box or whatever. And so, you know, I beat up however many I needed to, and there were still some left, and they just scatter, they'd run for it. And this one guy got on a bike and just like immediately accelerated to 100 kilometers an hour and slammed into me, and I just went flying backwards like 70 feet. I love moments like that. No.
So the actual driving in the game is probably my favorite part. Because it doesn't feel anything like a real car. It's arcadey as shit. It is Sega racing.
Really? I was going to say the opposite. That's the one kind of qualm I have with the game, is that, I don't know, handling feels really, really loose. I don't really feel like I'm in... Okay, well, no. Okay, so the driving maybe feels okay. I think it's the camera that I have an issue with.
Yeah, the camera does some weird things sometimes. Where it just
I guess what I want is something like GTA, where I just, you know, wherever I move the mouse is where the camera goes. But like if you start reversing or changing directions, like the camera then becomes on this spring, and if you try to rotate a certain way, like against it's basically like you're trying to pull it against that spring, and it's trying to force you to snap the camera in a certain direction. Just a small little thing. Maybe it's the field of view. I don't know. There's just something that.
Camera aside, what I love about that car driving is that it feels like a Hong Kong heist movie.
It does. Oh god, and the soundtrack is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like when I first loaded up the game and that the intro menu, and you know they have like some, you know, some maybe you know, stand, I don't know, like standard Chinese music, just like classical. I don't know what the right
soothing, like Japanese,
soothing
Japanese, Chinese.
Right. Oh, wow. Or, sorry, yeah. Soothing.
Someone's gonna be racist every week, I guess.
You know, soothing traditional music, I would say. And then like the beat dropped, and it started, and I was just like, all right. Before I even started playing the game, I was like, okay, all right, Sleeping Dogs, you're fucking all right to me.
You can say the soundtrack's great, but you're actually just going to flip through the channels until you get to Yellow Fever again, because that's the best song.
Because the first time that there was a chase, I was being chased, and this like really fucking rad song came on, And it was great. It was awesome. Like everything about the game just feels really good. There's a lot of attention to detail and
This is best driving. I know you had the issues with the driving, but can you think of like an open world game that had better driving?
I felt the driving in you know Grand Theft Auto 4 felt good. I hated
the driving in that game.
Uh-huh.
I hated the driving in that game. Everything felt too deliberate.
The driving in Grand Theft Auto 4 sucked because you couldn't do anything. If like you hit somebody, a cop was on your ass.
Yeah. Well, that's half the fun. But I don't know. Maybe I just haven't done enough driving yet. Maybe that's it. You can
swerve into like a motorcyclist and kill him, and nobody cares.
Yeah.
Like sometimes cops care. I've had to lose cops occasionally.
Sometimes cops care. Sometimes you run someone over.
It's Hong Kong. That seems fair, right? An accurate assessment.
Yeah, exactly. But
I really love that the car chases actually, they kind of make you work for it.
Yeah, you do have to work for it. And
like if you just follow straight the GPS, you're going to be behind quite a bit and you're going to struggle to keep that guy in view. But if you actually, if you know, like let's say that guy takes three turns and you know that he's going to come down this road. If you just go ahead and take that turn and try to cut him off and T-bone him, it totally works.
Yeah. Yeah. And instead of being like, you can't see you're the person you're chasing, restart.
Yeah.
Yeah. I assume later on there's probably gunplay in the game.
There is. It takes really, a while.
There's like one room where they made me use a gun.
Okay.
But other than that, like you can occasionally pick a gun up. And there's so maybe like two events, I think, that it's wise to use a gun, but you don't have to.
Okay.
Like the shootout in like the hospital.
I didn't know what to expect. I don't know if it was working up to a lot of gunplay, but I'm fine with there not being.
It never becomes a cover-based shooter. It pretty much always stays Arkham Asylum. Yeah.
And generally speaking, like in the open world areas, like where you actually just wander around and doing stuff, picking a gun is a bad idea because the cops will hear that and they will come down on you. So don't do it. Yeah. They actually treat like guns kind of realistically in that
way. Well, no, and so
did anyone play the DLC?
No.
Which DLC?
There's a number of DLC, but the one I like the most and the one I played when I went to go actually play this game back is Nightmare at North Point, which is a totally Hong Kong Chinese horror movie that's incredibly tongue-in-cheek. Like, there's a character that dies in Sleeping Dogs, and he just pops up randomly during this as a ghost.
That's awesome.
Like, he'll just poof into your car, and Wei Shen will freak out.
All right, I might have to get that. I did see that. But I guess there's probably a lot of, like, clothing DLC.
Yeah, there's plenty of clothing, okay. I think.
There was that one, like, fighting DLC, like the something Zodiac.
I just have to filter out what's, the main, other than the driving and all that, the main combat of the game is just fisticuffs, which is great, because, you know, they
well,
have
ideally,
stuff like,
it's just fisticuffs, right, but ideally. If they don't have weapons, I'm just going to grab them and throw them in the walls.
I usually do try to fight them. If I get in like a shitty situation where I'm surrounded, yeah, I'll grab one and just, you know, run the guy through, maybe slam his head into a speaker or something like that.
I will say
like,
when they do have weapons, it's that actually becomes untenable for me. Like if there's enough guys with weapons around me, I'm not gonna win.
I'm only experienced once or two, and I usually just wait until I can counter-strike and then just pick up the weapon.
Generally, what's a good strategy is if you see a bunch of guys in the street, and if you can pull this off, it's just like drive a truck into them.
I knew that was coming. Mark's going to hit him with a car route.
There's this one gang hideout that every single time I went there, they killed me. Like it's right near the penthouse, and you can drive a car into them, but they'll come back with reinforcement. There's just like three or four waves, and by that fourth wave, I'm just dead.
Oh man.
Yeah, I think I know the one you're talking about, but yeah, I actually did drive a car through there, and I just stayed in the car, and like as the waves came through, I just like run them over. And eventually they run out of dudes.
Yeah.
Another good thing you can do is like you can grab one of the thugs and just throw them into the trunk of a car. And that, generally speaking, that freaks them out because their friend's going to die. And then you wipe everybody out and just drive off with their friend in the trunk.
The best thing is that when I was, I think in that first case you get with the drug dealer, you go visit some guy named Playboy. And he's on a couch on the basketball court, but it was raining, so like there's some dudes out playing basketball in the rain, and here's Playboy just lounging, kicking back with his legs crossed on this couch while it's raining.
Are you playing with the HD textures?
Yeah, you know, I knew it was there, and I played like the first, I don't know, two nights I played without it, and then I downloaded it just to kind of see if I could see a difference. It's really nice.
Yeah. Especially when it rains, like the way the street looks, just fantastic.
Like, so there's a setting, just leave it raining all the time.
Yeah, the combat feels really good in the game, but I don't know. I guess you can hold shift and then you can like attack directionally, but I haven't really made use of that because you can't string together combos.
Yeah, I don't use any of the techniques. Like, you get by pretty well. Maybe that's why I died so much. But for most thugs, you get by just, you know, holding X occasionally to break their guard and stuff like that.
Are actually kind of difficult to pull off because they require like you like hit X and then hold X and then tap X or like some kind of weird combination of that.
I think I only have one technique right now, which is the one where, like, if you – it basically lets you, like, jump over and behind the guy. And that one's been pretty useful when you're surrounded.
The technique that works really well is you take a guy and you put him in, like, a fan, and you put his head in, like, a fan, and it cuts his head off. That's a good technique.
My favorite brutal kill is if you drag someone into a car that's being worked on, and you put them into the hood of the car, and then you drop the engine on them.
Couple of areas in the game where that worked, though.
One of my favorites so far is one where you just like throw a guy into a counter space and then jump up and you slam the security gate onto his stomach. That's a pretty
good Nightmare of North Point adds one where you can just hold someone's head over a burning trash fire.
Oh no!
Oh, that's awful.
Oh,
trash fires.
Nice. So is it just because like this is a better like Arkham City than Arkham City? Like
you can't fly. So
yeah. I think it's apples and oranges.
Yeah.
I liked what it was doing better than what Arkham City was trying to do. Like if they had like used this as the base instead of whatever they were using in Arkham City.
There's the perfect Batman game somewhere in the middle.
I was going to say this is probably a very good Batman Begins game where, you know, he's just first hitting the streets and beating up thugs.
So that does remind me of like the best line in the game is that one of the times if you start dating a girl and then start dating another girl, which I don't think is avoidable if you plan to date, that the first girl, you see her eventually cheating on you with another guy.
Oh, man.
Then you walk up to him I think it's a park, and he says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm Wei Shen, motherfucker."
Nice.
Nice. That's awesome. So I mean, I'm not very far in this game, but I really can't wait to play more of it. Yeah. I feel like I can just kind of take my time with it and, you know, do some of the side missions, do some of the thug missions, do some of the cases.
There's a ton of stuff to do. And just weird hidden stuff just pops up if you wander along. It's like, I'm just wondering about, and like, I heard this lady like in the back of a trunk. I said, was this like one of the ladies I put in the back of a trunk and forgot about? It's like, no, it turns out there's like this entire like quest line where like people are stuck in trunks and you pull them out and you just gotta look for them.
There was a time that I saw somebody pulled over on the side of the road. I was like, that's an interesting detail. So I went and I stopped, and then they hit me with a tire iron and put me in a trunk.
Oh no.
That was fucked up.
Were you naked? Did you wake up naked?
I think they took all my money, and then there was a quest line to go find it.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
And there's like, that's you can awesome. Just find like in the world to like give you like stuff for your apartment. Just like some shady dude in the city is like, can I get you a sofa? Yeah, I can totally get you a sofa.
There was some lady selling a mattress. Like someone
that's what you want. Just want a mystery mattress just from some old lady you found on the street.
Well, and it's good because there are a lot of games where I feel like I should be careful with my money, but I feel like this game just, you know, here has a lot of money, spend it. Just
there's gonna be so many like
I was basically parks. Always running over parking meters, so I had way too much money at the end of the game.
Oh, that's a good
idea. I don't know if you realize that, Brian, but it's something I didn't realize for a couple hours in the game, but like you can like just run over parking meters and get the money out of them.
I did not know that.
And like that's another one of those things that keeps track of. It's like all your friends have got this many parking meters.
Friend of the podcast, George Cavalines, he was my white whale because almost everything that I was ranked on, he was one above me.
I have like 90 seconds of safe driving.
Like Cammy is still above me. Like I can't catch up to Wes like that.
I don't know. If either of you have been playing it on computer recently, it hasn't like been able to connect to the social hub or whatever. Very frequently.
I got it working today.
It was working last night.
Yeah, it was working the other night, but then it, a lot of times it's just not working. So I don't know.
So I feel that Sleeping Dogs, the biggest victory of this game is that it was an open world game where I was really invested in the main story and the missions didn't like just completely fall off a cliff.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. Like the worst example I saw that was like Just Cause 2, where like
Well, even Saints Row 3 at a certain point, like, they basically threw their hands up and be like, whatever, yeah, just do
was,
side missions
was,
for a
There long. Was a huge lull in the middle of that game, which we talked about.
Yeah. And Sleeping Dogs, by that same point in that game, your shit goes down, basically. I don't want to spoil it for you or anybody listening, but cool. There's a very good mob story at the center of this game.
I'm looking forward to it.
I feel like the mid-game lull is not just an open-world thing. Like, yeah. Like almost every game I've played in the past couple of months has had a huge mid-game lull.
Yeah.
It's like, this is the part where the video game, enjoy your video game, and not our stupid half-baked narrative that we were forced into doing.
Yeah. Well,
such a thing like Metal Gear Solid Rising was just fuck everything all the time.
Well, that's the part of the game where they're saying... We made this game to be 12 hours, but they want 15 hours in the back of the box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just slow the walk speed down.
So that's Sleeping Dogs.
Repeat their library 15 times.
And I super recommend Sleeping Dogs.
Yeah, it's a really good game. I wonder if we're going to see a sequel.
I hope so. That would be neat.
It would be crazy if we didn't, because, of course, you don't want to say anecdotally or say, all my friends are playing this game. Well, all your friends are hardcore gamers, so yeah, they're going to play games.
Of the Western Square Enix titles, it was the worst selling. So we'll see. Maybe Square Enix will put more money into it, because it was a new IP, and those generally don't do great the first time around. So... Yeah. We will see.
So, and the next pick for Literature Book Club comes from Mark Bradshaw.
Which we will be playing in a Literature Book Club first, all four at the same time. We will be playing Dungeons & Dragons Chronicles of Mystaria off Steam, which contains both Dungeons & Dragons Tower of Doom and also Shadow of Mystaria.
And Tower of Doom. They sure, naming things was easy back in the day, wasn't it?
There was probably like an actual like D&D like module called Tower of Doom.
Hold on. So real quick, Sleeping Dogs. I had this thought the other day. So when it comes to driving in open world video games, one of the things, like if I'm on a chase or something, I feel like I should know the area, but I don't, and I don't know that I'd play the game enough to really feel like I know the streets really well. So I have to wonder. I don't think this has been done yet, and I hope it is done, that if there's some way to have the game world, I don't know if procedurally generated is the right word, but generated around a geolocated map of where you live.
Hmm.
So like imagine Sleeping Dogs, the world built around like the streets that you are familiar with.
That would be a really great idea in like... four or five places in the world. If you're like living in like bumfuck Idaho, that gets to be a really boring game because there's one road.
Yeah. Right. You could just open up Google Maps and just wander around that way.
Yeah. I don't know. It was just a thought I had that would be really neat, because then you could drive around and feel like, okay, I'm going to cut this guy off because I know this shortcut.
Well, that's...
I have a solution. Move to New York and then every game is like
that. Every game is... Yeah, that's true.
Also, stop blowing up New York, you jerks. There was that what was that one game in the PlayStation 4 reveal that was kind of doing that. Like, it was like you couldn't tell if they were being honest, like in like mapping like the entire United States of America.
Oh, that driving game.
Yes.
I want to say that was Drive Club. Need for Speed.
Was it Drive Club? No.
No, it wasn't Drive Club or Need for Speed. It was
something
by Ubisoft, wasn't it?
It was a single world. It was probably like... It wasn't Shift. It was probably like Clutch or something. I don't know.
Yeah. It's Gran Turismo. They just hope you would notice.
Hubcaps.
Cars by Ubisoft.
The crew.
The crew. That's what it is. Yeah.
Where you get your crew together to do stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah. When you were driving on a beach.
Yeah.
I do remember that one had this trailer that looked fucking phenomenal. And then they showed the game, and it's like, this does not look like the next generation at all.
And then the reveal that, oh my god, this game is online.
Oh, what? No!
No! Crazy!
Not so only that, but it looks like a game that would be totally uninteresting offline.
At least it's not...
I mean, all racing games, I feel like, would be kind of uninteresting offline.
At least it's not...
You had no one to play with.
Car-tars.
So hopefully take Brian's idea and turn it into a good video game.
Yeah, I think that would be super neat if you could somehow generate it like a guided single player story to fit into an area somebody knew.
Or just like plug in like coordinates into like Google Map coordinates or whatever, just like geolocation the coordinates and say, okay, this is where I want to be today. Yeah. And it generates like the map from Google Maps and says there's your road.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're like in the middle of North Dakota and there's not a whole lot there, but it's a really easy game.
I think the game that's going to do that is probably going to be for like an iPad or something and not a AAA console game.
There was some game, some racing game, like top-down 2D racing game that I think did use Google Maps somehow to create the tracks.
Is it Ubisoft's The Crew?
No, it's not Ubisoft's The Crew. It was something, though. I think it might have been for iPad.
The guys. The gang.
The dudes.
I still think the Brake Pads has potential as a racing
game. That sounds like a band. The seatbelts, good band.
Hey, so I got Pikmin 3 and it's really good, and I'm probably not gonna talk enough about it today because we don't have time.
Yeah, and Imran is out next week.
Yeah, so when I come back, I will talk about Pikmin 3 and probably other games.
Yeah, we'll try to date him to completion.
I get it.
Yep,
I understood that reference.
Thanks, everybody. I love you guys. So it'll be fun. We're going to play Chronicles of Mystara together and see what happens. Yes.
We could probably record that, actually.
We probably could. We probably should.
We probably should. All right. Okay. Talk to you guys later.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.